ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
विथितुष्णीं स्थितान् दैत्यान् विलोक्या पुरुषोत्तमः स्मयमानो विषिज्यग्रं पुच्छं जग्रहासमरा. Thus the demons remain silent, opposing the desire of the demigods. Seeing the demons and understanding their motive, the personality of Godhead smiled. Without discussion, he immediately accepted their proposal by grasping the tail of the snake, and the demigods followed him. Kritasthana vibhagastha evam kushyapanandana mamantu paramam jata amritaratam vayonidhim. After thus adjusting how the snake was to be held, the sons of Kashyapa, both demigods and demons, began their activities, desiring to get nectar by churning the ocean of milk. Mutyamane nave sodriyer anadharo hyapovishat driyamano pibalabhir gauravar pandunandanaha. O son of the Pandu dynasty, when Mandara mountain was thus being used as a churning rod in the ocean of milk, it had no support, and therefore, although held by the strong hands of the demigods and demons, it sank into the water. Tesu nirvina manasa parimrana mukasriya asanswa paruṣe naste daivinati baliyasa. Because the mountain had been sunk by the strength of providence, the demigods and demons were disappointed and their faces seemed to shrivel. Vilokya vignesha vidim tadeshwaro durantavirya vidita visandhi kritvabhut kachapam abhutamahat pravishyatoyam girim ujahara. Seeing the situation that had been created by the will of the Supreme, the unlimitedly powerful Lord, whose determination is infallible, took the wonderful shape of a tortoise, entered the water, and lifted the great Mandara mountain. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Here is evidence that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the supreme controller of everything. As we have previously described, there are two classes of men, the demons and the demigods, but neither of them are supremely powerful. Everyone has experienced that hindrances are imposed upon us by the supreme power. The demons regard these hindrances as mere accidents or chance, but devotees accept them to be the acts of the supreme ruler. When faced with hindrances, therefore, devotees pray to the Lord, Tatenukampam susumakshamano bhunjana evatmakritam vipakam. Devotees endure hindrances, accepting them to be caused by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and regarding them as benedictions. Demons, however, being unable to understand the Supreme Controller, regard such hindrances as accidental. Here, of course, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present personally. It was by His will that there were hindrances, and by His will those hindrances were removed. The Lord appeared as a tortoise to support the great mountain, Kshitir iha vipulatare tava tishtati prishte. The Lord held the great mountain on His back, Keshavadrita kurma sarira jaya jagadisha hari. Dangers can be created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they can also be removed by Him. This is known to devotees, but demons cannot understand it. Translation. Seeing the situation that had been created by the will of the Supreme, the unlimitedly powerful Lord, whose determination is infallible, took the wonderful shape of a tortoise, entered the water, and lifted the great Mandara mountain. Mahatmanastumam bharata daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantyamanya manaso gyatvabhutatim avyayam. That the great souls, the Mahatmas, they are always under the influence of the divine energy of the Lord. They are constantly being protected by the loving hands of the Lord in every circumstance of life. Therefore, with this faith, they have full confidence that nothing is happening by chance, nothing is happening by accident, but everything is being orchestrated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply to facilitate them the opportunity of deepening their attachment, deepening their surrender at His lotus feet. Krishna also says, Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetu nani nukonteya jagat viparivartate. That for a materialist who is acting independent of the will of God, who has left the divine grace of the Lord, Krishna is also the supreme controller of everything taking place within such a person's life. Because the material nature, which are being constantly activated by the three modes of nature, is working at every moment under His supervision. So therefore, in all circumstances of life, nothing happens by chance, but everything is taking place by the arrangement of Sri Krishna. Here we find a wonderful example of the difference between the demigods and the demons. The demigods and the demons are here side by side, working together in a united manner for the purpose of churning the ocean of milk in order to obtain nectar. Of course, the demigods are sure that they will get the nectar, and the demons are sure that they will get every drop. So actually, in their hearts, there's absolutely no unity. There is simply enmity, hate, envy, and a very, very fierce feeling of competition. But externally, because they are both thinking that their own motives will be served, they have befriended one another, and they are unified and working together. Of course, in the material world, we find so often in politics, in business, there is this superficial type of unity where actually people have no affection for one another whatsoever, but simply because they feel that there is some self-interest, even if it is meant to ultimately destroy the person you are unified with, they will accept as unity. People are so much motivated by their sense gratification. So the demons, they have agreed to the proposal of churning the ocean of milk simply because they are more powerful than the demigods at that time. So they are thinking, if we get this nectar, we will easily be able to take it all. What can the demigods do at this time to prevent us from drinking every drop? So with this promise, they are working very hard. Of course, in this world, whatever we work for, we have to accept there will be many hindrances. Whether we are working in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or whether we are even working for some foolish attachment such as money or fame or something like that, there will be many impediments. And this impediment is a great test. And the demons, of course, and the demigods, they are perceiving these tests with completely different vision. The demons are thinking, why is this happening to us? What material arrangement can we make to rescue the situation? And the demigods, they are thinking, ah, Krishna has some plan. I may not understand what it is. The depth of Krishna's intelligence is inconceivable to any jivatma's mind. But surely this is the divine will of the Lord. Surely Krishna does have a very, very illuminating gift that he wants to offer us through this situation. After all things work for the good for those who love God. So therefore, a devotee, even in the face of great crisis, he prays, Tathenukam pam sushamikshamano bunjana evatmikritam vipagam. My dear Lord, thank you very much. You are giving me this suffering only by your causeless mercy. I deserve so much more. But by your inconceivable will, you are giving me just exactly what I need to help me turn my consciousness back to the shelter of your lotus feet. And he faces the greatest hindrances, the greatest pains, with folded hands and obeisance, thinking only of Krishna. When we have this faith in the truth that Krishna is the supreme controller, that he is the cause of all causes, then what anxiety can there be in our life? It is this faith that is the basis and the foundation of peace. Peace created by any material adjustments is not peace at all. It is just a temporary relief from the natural condition of this violent world of birth and death. But inevitably, that condition of so-called peace must vanish right before our eyes. Things cannot always work out the way we want them. After all, no one wants to grow old, get diseased, and die, but it is forced upon us. No one wants earthquakes, but it is forced upon us. No one wants floods, or heat waves, or droughts, hurricanes, cyclones. No one wants wars. But they happen, unavoidably. Why is this? Because Maya is very strong, and we are insignificant. And in this material world, we are simply like the most insignificant insects before the powers of the demigods, before the powers of the modes of material nature. So all of our so-called arrangements for happiness and peace within society must be futile. To the degree we're taking shelter of those arrangements we are making, to that degree we are in illusion, we are in ignorance. To the degree we accept the fact that we are helpless, and with faith in the Lord, understand He is the controller. He is doing this for my good. Therefore, in this situation, I should simply surrender to His lotus feet. On the practical level, I may have to deal with the situation, but in my heart, I am not thinking that my efforts are going to create any solution. My efforts are simply an offering of service to please Him. But the solution is my surrendering to His divine will from the core of my heart. When Krishna was speaking to Arjuna, the Pandavas, they did not want to fight this war. It was inevitable. It came upon them beyond their control. They wanted to work together in unity with the Kurus. But even for devotees, things do not happen the way we want them. They tried by so many means to correct the situation, and they were far more expert than any of us. But it was not possible. So the war came upon them. as a very, very tremendous obstacle. Krishna did not tell them to fight, and he did not tell them that you just fight and that will solve the problem. Nor did he tell them to give up the fight, and that would solve the problem. He told them, you just fight as a service to me. Your faith that ultimately I am the controller and the result is whatever I desire, that will keep you peaceful throughout the fight. Then you will not be attached to success or failure, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor, gain or loss. Simply fight for the sake of fighting. Imagine how much pressure was on Arjuna. Yesterday someone was asking whether it's good when there's too much pressure on us. It's necessary. There must be pressure on us. Because without pressure, our general tendency is we become lazy, we become lethargic. But that pressure should not put us in anxiety. That pressure should rather simply motivate us to put every drop of our mind, every drop of our intelligence, every drop of our physical power with full enthusiasm in the Lord's service. Otherwise, without pressure, we will all just give half of our heart to Krishna, half of our heart to whatever we are doing. But our pressure is not to motivate us to attain a result. Our pressure is to motivate us to execute our service. The result is in Krishna's hands. Our service may be to strive for a result. That is always our service. Whatever we do, we're striving for a result. But we're not attached to the result. We're attached simply to the service of striving. Therefore, we don't really care whether we win or lose. We really don't care whether we're a success or a failure. We're simply concerned that I'm pleasing Krishna by my endeavor. This is what Bhagavad Gita is teaching. And when we develop this consciousness, then we are Krishna conscious. But if we are aspiring for the fruits of our action, then we are simply cast into the ocean of the modes of material nature. And the waves of those modes are constantly pushing us and beating upon us, sometimes pushing us up, sometimes pushing us down. The nature of the modes of material nature is, these laws are similar to the laws of gravity. What comes up must go down. Yesterday someone was asking that he knows somebody who's one of the most pious and peaceful men he's ever met in his life. He said, this man, he's so calm under all circumstances. He's very pious, he's very charitable. He's always thinking good things to others. He never criticizes. Not only that, but when his own father died, he was just very detached. He didn't cry. He just said, well, what to do? There's nothing we can do. Let us just go on with our life. And he has such qualities, but he does not believe that there's a God. He believes that Rama and Krishna, that they're only stories. And just like there are so many philosophers in the West, there are so many philosophers in the East. And they just, you know, according to what the society needs to make them think that everything's all right, they write some books. But actually, there's no real absolute truth. So he was saying, how is this that this person is so advanced? He appears to be liberated. He appears to have attained mukti. And he does not even believe in God. You see, by the modes of material nature, we become influenced by our previous karma. If one has acted very piously in the past, the results of his previous karma can be that a person is very peaceful, very sober, very happy, very equiposed in all circumstances. He may even be very charitable, very sympathetic toward others. But he is not liberated. He is simply reaping the results of his past karma. But the law of karma is a law of nature, just as the law of gravity is a law of nature, which means what goes up must come down. So now he's up, but how long can he stay up? Inevitably, when his good karma runs out, when it is exhausted, then his consciousness will dive down into the modes of passion and ignorance. And then he will be frustrated, he will be in anxiety, he will begin to engage in sinful activities. If he does not elevate himself to the transcendental state from the sattva guna, then it's just a matter of time till he must be pushed down again, because the modes of material nature are like waves in the ocean. Sometimes they push you up, then the next wave comes down and pushes you under. So this is not the liberated state. It is like building a palace on sand. The palace looks wonderful, but when the storm comes, it has to fall. So therefore, it is better if one is a sinful person. It is better if you're in the mode of ignorance, addicted to intoxication, gambling, meat-eating, and illicit sex. And you realize that I'm a fallen soul, and in that state you cry out for the Lord, please save me, please help me. Then being so called in the mode of goodness, very pious, very charitable, very peaceful, and being so puffed up, so proud, that you think that you can judge the position of God. You're on such a high level that you're categorizing the position of Vedavyas, Narada Muni, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, thinking that your opinion is the final judgment of who these people really are. Huh? The man was saying, but this person seems so humble. I said, so humble? What kind of humility is this? He may be humble in his daily activities. That's just an appearance. But in his heart, he thinks that he's so great that he could make judgmental statements to categorize the position of God and all of his incarnations and all of the great saints. He's thinking his opinion is the final. It's better to be on the bottom on the way up than on the top on the way down. Huh? Srila Prabhupada has said that there are many sannyasis in India who have never sinned in their life, who follow all the principles of sannyas strictly, the external principles, who know the Vedas very scrutinizingly, externally, but who are so proud they cannot put their head at the feet of a great devotee and take shelter of the Lord. They think that they are very learned and great. He said he has come to America and he has found these hippies addicted to every sinful activity, but they'll very readily admit that I'm fallen, I'm degraded, I'm sinful, please help me. And they'll put their head at the feet of a pure soul and beg him, please give me your mercy. Srila Prabhupada said the hippies of the West are more advanced in spiritual life than even the great sannyasis of India, because they're humble, because they accept that they're sinful, because they accept that they need the shelter of God and they're willing to cry out. And then the same man, we offered him a book. Take this book, read it. He said, no, I already know these books. I already know everything that's in these books. I've read all the books. I know the Vedas. Ah, you know the Vedas. Well, you know what it says in the Vedas? In the Vedas it says, the one who says he knows does not know, and one who says he does not know, knows. So what is your position? So he became very quiet. So you see, by our material calculations, by our material arrangements, there is no solution. We can at the best create a temporary solution to the problems, but actually that's worse. Because when you create a temporary solution which creates some peace in your life, then you become attached to that. Then when that's taken away, you suffer more than if you never had that peace. Right? When everything's always bad, you get used to it. And you think, all right, I just have to accept it. Even if you're a materialist, you just have to accept it. But when everything's bad, and then you are, by your manipulation of material energy, you make things very good, and you become attached to the good, then when it gets back to the bad stage, it's more painful than death. So all our material arrangements cannot possibly make us more peaceful or happy. In the long run, they will make us more miserable. The more successful we are, ultimately, the more miserable we will become. To never have anything is painful, but to have it and lose it is thousands of times more excruciating to one's heart. Isn't it not? It's like the poor people. They want more, but this is my lot. This is the way I've always been. They don't mind so much. But somebody that's very rich, that loses everything, they become in the same position. And they cannot even live. They cannot survive. They're in so much anxiety. They're so much depending on the facilities that they have created for themselves. So therefore, there's no solution in any way, shape, or form by our material manipulations to try to find happiness. In the face of eternity, whatever solution we make is only so temporary, so flickering, and it inevitably will change again by the forces of the modes of material nature. What goes up must come down. That is the law of gravity. That is the law of karma. Yehi samsparshita bhoga dukha jonaya vate atyanta vanta konte yanateshuramate buddha. That an intelligent man does not strive for such material pleasures, for such material prosperity, because he knows it has a beginning and an end, and it's a source of misery. Even his success is a source of misery. What tastes like nectar in the beginning tastes like poison in the end. That is the words of Krishna. Therefore, there is only one solution, as Balabhacharya prayed, Sri Krishna Sharanamam, to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. That is the only solution. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Forget about all these manipulative endeavors, even in the name of religion. Just surrender to me, Krishna says. I shall relieve you of all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Our anxiety is due to fear. When we take shelter at the feet of God, there's nothing to fear. Therefore, the only condition of peace is faith. Faith that Krishna is good, that he is the controller, that not a blade of grass can move without his sanction, that everything that's happening is his loving mercy toward me. After all, being a devotee and striving in devotional service, we're not any longer simply under the modes of material nature. It may appear that we are, but they're being manipulated by Krishna for our good. Even if we commit a sinful activity and there's a reaction, it's not our karma. Krishna's personally slapping us with his divine lotus hand just to try to wake us up, just to try to sober us from our stupor of intoxicated conditioning. Don't you see what you are doing to your life? Like a father, if a child is acting crazy, sometimes the father or the mother has to slap the child. Wake up, you crazy fool. Don't you see what you're doing? Ah, yes, I have done wrong. Huh? All of our pains, all of our sufferings, Krishna is trying to purify us. Krishna is trying to give us the opportunity that you never have to take birth in this material world again. When one comes into the divine movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is not meant to ever take birth in this material world again. Therefore, Krishna will do everything within his power to make this our last birth, to send us back to Godhead. But it is not easy. Until we genuinely, from the core of our heart, cry out, Krishna, I am yours. From this day on, I am yours. Nothing is mine. I am not mine. I am yours. Everything is yours. Srila Prabhupada explained that if you can one time with a heart full of devotion and sincerity cry out, Krishna, from this day on, I am yours. At that moment, you are liberated in pure bhakti. Krishna will pick you up and take you back to Godhead from your heart. He will reveal the truth at once. But can we say that with sincerity? That Krishna, from this day on, I am yours. What does that mean? I am yours. Lord Chaitanya explained in Shikshastakam, Ashlasya Vapadaratim, that if you want Krishna, embrace me. If you want, trample upon me. If you want, make me broken-hearted by your absence. You are free to deal with me in any way you want. I am simply your servant unconditionally. And that's all I want, is your service unconditionally. Naham vipro nacha narapatir napi vaisho na shudro naham varani nacha grihapatir gunt jagato vatir va kintu prodyan nikila paramananda punamritadbeer gopi bharatur padakamalayor das das anudas. My Lord, I am not a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, a Vaishya or a Sudra. I'm not a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyas. These are all external designations. My only desire, my only hope, my only position striving in life is just to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of your servant. The servant does not demand from the master. The servant simply performs as a service and accepts whatever the master provides as a result. That is a real servant. The very unique glory of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, that they pray, Krishna, I am giving you everything. I am doing everything for you. And in return, I expect nothing. Others are praying to God, I will do this tapasya, I will do this austerity, give me something in return. But a devotee performs the greatest tapasya of surrendering to the mission of the Lord, whatever it is, and expects nothing in return. Asks for nothing in return. Krishna, all I want is the right to serve. All I want is the opportunity to please you. Na danam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janamani janamanishwari bhavatad bhakti rahaita kitvai. See, in ecstasy because they're liberated. Can't control themselves from praising the Lord. Like a madman. No hard and fast rules. Lord Chaitanya is praying, I do not want money. I do not want beautiful women surrounding me. I do not want fame, position, popularity. I do not even want liberation. I do not even want freedom from pain, suffering, and anxiety. I only want one thing, that I may please you by engaging in your service, birth after birth after birth. This is the lesson of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that his devotees, they simply want the opportunity to serve. And whatever condition is put upon us, however long and treacherous it may seem, there is absolutely no question of anxiety if we simply have faith that Krishna is in my heart. He knows exactly what the situation is, and he knows what's best, and he is providing what is best. I will act according to his desire, but there's no anxiety. I will fight, I will work according to the guidance of my Guru Maharaj, but the results are in Krishna's hands. When Krishna sent his little cowherd boyfriends to the Brahmins to beg for charity, they accepted the mission of the Lord. They were not begging for themselves. They went to the Brahmins to beg for food, for prasad, so that they can bring it back to Krishna and Valaramji. And the Brahmins totally ignored them, which was a great insult. If someone calls you a bad name, that's an insult. But if someone totally ignores you and doesn't even acknowledge your existence, that's far more of an insult. That means he doesn't even give you enough credit to even say anything to you. The greatest insult is being totally ignored. They were totally ignored. They were begging, like humble beggars. The Brahmins did not even look upon them. And the boys became very dejected. They went to Krishna, "Krishna, they would not give us anything." Krishna said, "Why are you feeling bad? You did your service. That is the joy of the soul, to perform the service. The results, that is not your concern. That is my concern. My business is the results. Don't try to interfere with my business. Your business is the service. Your business is to try to get the result. And if you're trying to get the result, your life is perfect. That is the success in and of itself. Whether I give or don't give, that is not your concern. You should not be attached to the fruits of your actions. You should simply be attached to the service for the pleasure of the Lord. The Lord does not need our results. He already possesses everything. When you offer water to Mother Ganga, does Mother Ganga need your water? She's giving you the water to offer. She does not need the water. But she enjoys and takes great pleasure in your offering. So Krishna enjoys, he takes pleasure in our bhakti, in our devotion, in our service attitude. Without a proper service attitude, nothing within our consciousness is pleasing to Krishna. Not even the chanting of the holy name. Some people ask, why is it that people sometimes, they apparently chant very, with great discipline for 10, 20 years, and still they have so many bad qualities? How is this possible? Krishna is not concerned with our chanting. He's concerned with how we are chanting. He's not concerned with the number of our mantras. He's concerned with the quality of how we are offering these mantras. In other words, Krishna is independent. He is the supreme autocrat. If we chant his name, he doesn't have to appear within his name. If he wants, the name will just be a material sound vibration without potency. The degree of potency is to the degree Krishna decides he wants to appear within his name. And he reciprocates with how menial our service attitude is. If we are chanting in an attitude of a menial servant, then Krishna will fully manifest himself within his name. But if we are proud and we have no service attitude and we chant the holy names, that sound vibration is simply like a shadow of Krishna's presence. Therefore, how did Srila Prabhupada teach us to chant? He told us 99% of our spiritual advancement is by chanting 16 rounds and having kirtan, the chanting of the holy name. 99% of our spiritual advancement is in our chanting of the holy name. Huh? You have heard that? So then why is it we chant japa for an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours every day, and kirtan at the most 2 hours, only allowed to sleep 6 hours. That means you have 18 hours. That means 14 hours you're doing other activities. And at the most 4 hours you're chanting the holy names. So if 99% of our advancement is chanting the holy name, why don't we just chant all day? Why are we spending 14 hours sweeping floors, distributing books, managing businesses, executing our profession, cooking food, dealing with management, getting permits from the government? What does this have to do with? Why don't I just go to Vrindavan and I chant all day? If 99% of my advancement is chanting, Why should I do all these other crazy things? Why 14 hours of these things and 3 or 4 chanting? The reason is all these other activities are devotional service. All these other activities are meant to be done in the spirit of obedient, menial service to the Guru. And by that 14 hours of menially serving the Guru, you develop a proper attitude that I am the servant, I am the humble servant, I am the insignificant servant. And you develop that attitude of what can I offer to you? How can I serve you? And when you chant the holy name in that spirit of being a servant, then your chanting has real quality, has divine quality. Therefore, to go to Vrindavan, to be a Babaji, before you are completely immersed in a total attitude of being the menial servant, is not productive at all for spiritual life. You could chant 64 rounds, you could chant 3 lakhs of rounds. But it will not be as pleasing to Krishna if you are thinking, I am advanced, I am proud, I am Babaji, I am great sadhu, I am taking shelter of the Dham, just see how nice I am. If you don't have the servantist attitude, the obedient meniality that Guru Maharaj, whatever you want, I will do. If you do not have that feeling, someone who's chanting 16 rounds and the rest of the day he's just being harassed by all sorts of difficulties that he has to endure on behalf of his guru in the middle of a horrible city like Bombay, such a person is going to make millions of times more advancement than a person who's chanting without all day long without that service attitude. Therefore, great souls like Haridas Thakur, they were totally immersed in the service attitude 24 hours a day. So when they would chant 3 lakhs of the names of Krishna every day, every name was crying out to Krishna, how can I serve you? How can I please you? And this is exactly what Krishna wanted him to do. This is exactly what his Guru Maharaj wanted him to do. You chant all day and purify the whole universe by the glory of your pure chanting. So the quality is what is necessary. And this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the great Acharyas are teaching us. How to chant in the proper quality of mind that I am your servant. And how to prepare ourselves every day. We should be thinking all day long, whatever we do, the real purity of our activities is to the degree we are adopting the state of mind that I am the menial, obedient, humble servant. I am not demanding, I am not requesting, I am simply trying to please. And in this way, we are preparing ourselves to chant the holy names perfectly and make real spiritual advancement by the recitation of the Maha Mantra. If you have faith that Krishna is perfect and he's in control, then what is there to fear? What is the anxiety? Krishna's plan is good. And it is only when we develop that consciousness then there can be real peace. Brahma Bhuta Prasana Atmana Sochitina Kankshati Mag Bhaktim Labhate Param. When one attains the spiritual platform of life, he does not hanker for anything nor lament for anything. He accepts Krishna's mercy in whatever way it comes and is grateful. So here we find the demigods and the demons. They are the most powerful controllers in all the universe. You know how much control the demigods have? They are controlling the rain, the wind. They are controlling the laws of gravity. They are controlling the fire. They are controlling the movement of the planets. Who are we compared to that? And the demons, they were so powerful that they conquered the demigods and took, headed by Bali Maharaj, they took all the acquisitions and all the responsibilities away from the demigods, and the demons became the controllers of the whole universe. So this class of men that we're reading about in Bhagavatam are just inconceivably, uncomprehensibly powerful. Compared to them, we are not even insects. And yet, in trying to execute their duty to fulfill their desires, to move this Mandara mountain and to churn the ocean of milk with it. At every step, they're being baffled. Every step, they are confronting a situation which is beyond their control, beyond their power. First, they make a truce, and they're told, take this mountain of gold and bring it to the ocean of milk. Yes, yes, yes. That mountain of gold was so heavy that as they were trying to move it, they were falling under it. They were screaming and crying. It was so heavy. Their fingers were bleeding. As it was falling, it was crushing their fingers, crushing their arms, crushing their limbs. Most of the demigods and demons were being crushed to death under the weight of this mountain. They were howling and screaming and crying, we can't do it. And yet they kept trying and trying, of no avail. Ultimately, Lord Narayan had to come. Oh, you think you have the power to do anything? If I do not empower you, you cannot do anything. Lord Narayan, with one hand, he effortlessly picked up the mountain, put it on the back of Garuda, and told all the demigods and demons, you all get on Garuda with me. They all boarded Garuda, and he took them all to the ocean of milk. Garuda was not tired, he was not fatigued, he was just going. Garuda's the servant. But because he was empowered by Lord Narayan, he acted even more powerfully than Narayan. Narayan effortlessly lifted the mountain. But Garuda not only took the mountain, but all the demigods and all the demons, and they were big, powerful personalities. There were millions of them, and he took them all to the ocean of milk without in any way feeling tired. He wasn't straining. So Krishna's inconceivable power is he can empower you with even more strength than himself if he wants. But whether you are Garuda or whether you are the demigods or the demons, you are completely dependent on Krishna's mercy. You cannot do anything. You cannot even lift your finger without his help. You cannot even open up your eyes without his help. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha. And we're thinking, oh, I am the doer. I am very good. You can do nothing without Krishna. And then they start churning. Finally, by the grace of God, the mountain is in the ocean of milk. They get Vasuki. They start churning the ocean. And now what happens? The mountain starts sinking into the ocean. And they're trying to keep it up. And they cannot keep it up. With all their power, with all their efforts, they cannot keep it up. Do you know what it is when such a big, big, powerful controller is a failure? You know how anxiety they get in? Huh? Someone like me, you know, can't really do anything right. When we fail, we just think, well, that's the way it always happens. But when the demigods and the demons, who are the conquerors of everything, everything is always working just the way they want it, when they're miserably failing, my God, they're frustrated. They don't know what to do. They were struggling. They could not keep the mountain. It was sinking lower and lower. Finally, again, Krishna appeared in the form of Kurma Rupa. Shityariha vipulatare tavatishtati prishte keshavadrita kurma sarira jaya jagadisha hari. The Lord appeared as a big, big turtle. His back was literally hundreds and thousands of miles in length and width. When the Lord wants to be a turtle, he's not like an ordinary turtle. One may ask, how is it possible that a tortoise can be so big? Achintya Shakti, Krishna can do anything at any time. There is nothing impossible for the Lord. So he took the form of this gigantic, wonderful tortoise. And very gracefully, as tortoises move, he crawled under the mountain, put the mountain on his back, and his shell became
the support and the pivot for the mountain, to hold it in place. And then they began to churn. And then what happened is the top of the mountain started swaying back and forth. We're going to read this. And as it was swaying back and forth, they were thinking, my God, what to do? How are we going to churn it? We have to keep the top in place. And everything within their effort, they could not keep it in place. Again, they were total failures, the supreme controllers of the universe. They could do nothing. They were helpless. They could not execute their duty. Kurma Rupa was holding it from the bottom, and then he appeared as Ajita. And he appeared on the top of the mountain, and with his hand he held it, stirred steady. Ah, okay, now we can start to churn. Now we will churn very nicely. Then they started to churn. And what happened is as they started to churn, they couldn't move the mountain. It was so heavy. You know, you have to make it go back and forth. They were pulling on the serpent Vasuki with all their might, going back and forth, and they could hardly get it to move, what to speak of fast enough to churn the ocean. And they were so frustrated. They were crying out as they were pulling with all their might, all their strength. They couldn't do it. Finally, Krishna, again, he incarnated in the mode of goodness and filled the demigods with his empowerment. Because you see, the demigods get strength from the mode of goodness. And then through the mode of passion and ignorance, he incarnated and filled the demons. Because that's what it is, passion and ignorance that is the motivating force that gives strength to the demons. So in this way, Krishna empowered to give them strength. They didn't have it. Then they started to churn, and it started to move. Then what happens? Then Vasuki, he's getting so hot because they're churning so fast that fire starts pouring out of his mouth. And all the demons are getting burnt. We read yesterday that Krishna took the mouth of Vasuki because he knew this would happen. He wanted to protect them, but the demons didn't trust Krishna. A demon is thinking, everyone must be like me. I'm envious and I'm only concerned with number one. I'll only take the position that's good for me. So therefore Krishna must be the same way. So he's taking the head because the head's the best place. Actually, Krishna was taking the head to protect them. But because they were so envious, they're thinking everyone's envious of me. Krishna's trying to cheat me. Because I'm a cheater, everyone's a cheater. So they said, no, we will not churn this ocean unless we get the head. Krishna said, he smiled. Then you take the head, you crazy fellows. And when they took the head and he started, the poisonous flames started pouring out, the demons were all being burnt to ashes. And even on the other side, the demigods, they were so hot from these pouring flames, they didn't know what to do. So again, they could not churn. They could not do their duty. So then Krishna incarnated as light rain. And this rain cooled off Vasuki and cooled off everybody, and again they started to churn. So understand that these great controllers, however big they might be in our eyes, they cannot do anything without the help of Krishna. Every stage of this lila, they were helpless until Krishna came to help them. Huh? Keshava Drita Kurma Sarira Jai Jagadisha Hari. This divine incarnation of Kurma Rupa is very important to understand. Because whatever we do in life, we should understand that without the grace of Krishna, it has no support. We are all concerned with security and support. But everything, all of our security and all of our support is exclusively resting on the mercy of God. And without His mercy, nothing can be upheld. Huh? So this great tortoise incarnation is showing us by His divine example that however great we are, even up to the point of the greatest personalities in the entire universe, we are completely depending on the support of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for our very existence or to get anything done. Huh? So when we think of Kurma Rupa, we should pray to him, Krishna, whatever I have, it is only by your support that I can preserve it. And whatever I do not have, it is only by your support that I can ever attain it. It is only by your support that I can survive moment after moment. So the incarnation of Kurma is the Lord's incarnation, which is exhibiting to the world how he is the supreme support for everything that exists and everything that we do. And we are completely depending on his mercy at all times. This huge mountain, try to understand the difference between Krishna and the rest of us. This huge mountain that was crushing the limbs of all these demigods and demons, and they were screaming and crying when even one part of it would fall upon them. The whole mountain was on his back, and they were churning it, and it was just grinding back and forth. But Kurma Rupa was so mighty and so powerful that it was just like a relieving scratching to the itch on his back, and he was feeling great pleasure. That is the difference between he and us. He is great. God is great, and we are insignificant. He is Vibhu, which means unlimited. We are Anu, which means so small that it's not even worth talking about ourselves. Huh? How can we find happiness talking about ourselves when we understand Krishna is Vibhu and we are Anu? In the presence of a 1 crore rupee check, do you talk about the glories of one paisa? Just see, I have one paisa. If you have nothing else, you think, one paisa is a lot. But when you have a rupee check for 1 crore or cash, 1 crore of rupees, you're thinking, I have 1 crore of rupees. You don't say, I have one paisa. In the presence of something great, you're never concerned with something tiny. In the presence of God, who is unlimited, we are nothing. We're not even worth talking about. We're not even worth thinking about. We should just think of Krishna. We should just praise Krishna. If we praise Krishna, the happiness from that glorification will be as infinite as Krishna is. But if we praise ourselves, the happiness of that glorification will be as insignificant as we are. So therefore, praise the Lord, my friend. Forget your own so-called glories. After all, they are all borrowed plumes. It is only by the mercy of Kurma Dev that we have any support to do anything within our life. So all glory should go to him. Keshava Drita Kurma Sarira Jaya Jagadisha Hari. That is our prayer. Today is the day of Lord Ganesh. So people worship Ganesh. Om Ganesh Pute Namaha. They offer their obeisances to Lord Ganesh for the purpose of removing obstacles in our life. They pray to Lord Ganesh for the purpose of helping us to become successful in our endeavors. Is this the main reasons people approach Lord Ganapati? In the Vedas it is described, these are his two functions in this universe. He removes obstacles from our endeavors, and he bestows us with success in our efforts. Now, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami explains that before beginning our deity worship or our puja, it is conducive to bhakti to offer our obeisances to Ganesh, Om Ganesh Pute Namaha. That is the mantra he gives. But our desire is not material. We understand, Ganesh, your service is to remove obstacles. So please remove obstacles in my service to Lord Hari. Ultimately, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whatever the demigods do, they are only the distributors of my mercy. I I am providing, just like if Sridayananda decides I'm not going to sell any Mufflal fine products to a particular store that's exclusively selling his things to the public, what will happen to that store? Will they have anything if he does not give them? They cannot give to you. They're out of business. They're finished. So if Krishna does not give the demigods the benedictions, the facilities for those benedictions, all the demigods will go bankrupt. Huh? They'll have no business. They'll have nothing to give. No one will come to them anymore if they have nothing to give. They'll lose all their customers. So Krishna is providing everything to everyone. But these devotees are very, very special, very, very dear. Ganesha is not an ordinary demigod. He is directly the son of Shankar. He is directly the son of Lord Shiva. Vaishnavanam yata sambhu. Lord Shiva is the supreme most almighty of all the demigods. He's not even a demigod. He's actually an expansion of Vishnu himself. He plays the role of a demigod, but he is beyond. He is not a jivatma. He is a supreme devotee of Godhead. And of course, one who is the beloved son of such a great soul, imagine his exalted position. So Lord Ganesh, he is the empowered child of Lord Shiva. And he is given the glorious task of removing obstacles. So therefore, as devotees, we can worship Ganesh. But if we really want to please him, we do not ask him, remove obstacles so that I can make a lot of money, because so that I can get a good husband or wife, so that I can defeat my competitors, so that I can get good grades in school. You should not ask a big man for something so small. But unfortunately, 99.99999% of devotees of Lord Ganesh, they are simply asking him for these petty little material benedictions. Therefore, kamaisthaisthaya hrittigyana prabhadyantena devata tamtam evaitikonte yasadata bhava bhavata. Krishna says these persons are less intelligence. They're simply motivated by lusty desires. Persons who approach demigods for material benedictions. But we can offer all respect to that demigod, factually by watering the root of the tree, the tree is satisfied. If you satisfy your spiritual master who's offering that service to Radha Gopinath, and Gopinath and Radharani are pleased, all the demigods are perfectly satisfied. You need not go to anyone else. But you can also approach the demigods. And if you approach them in such a way that, my dear Lord, I do not want anything for my own sense gratification from you, but help me to improve my service to Lord Hari. Remove the obstacles that are creating an impediment within my heart in the service to my Guru Maharaj. If your goal is to please Krishna, then that is perfect. So even great saints, even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, would offer his obeisance and his prayers to Shankar, to Kartikeya, to Ganesh. But he did it in this spirit to show us that yes, these are great souls. Never offend them. Never minimize them. But understand, what is their relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And you can reciprocate and have a relationship with them in relationship to your devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ganesh is a very great devotee. You know the story of the race between Ganesh and Kartikeya? Huh? It's a very famous story. Everyone knows it. They were supposed to go around the world. And Lord Kartikeya, he has a carrier. You know, Kartikeya is very slender and very strong. He's a warrior. He really knows how to get around. He's very agile. Plus, his carrier is a peacock. And that peacock can just soar through the air at top speed. And Ganesh, he's like a pundit. He's not, you don't see him so much in the battlefield. Sometimes, but usually he's sitting up in Badrikashram, just writing the Vedas with Vyasadeva. Huh? And his devotees are always giving him all these ladus. So he gets, he's overweight from material standards. And he rides on a rat. How fast is a rat, a mouse? Huh? Mouses don't fly so good. So here it is, a race between Kartikeya on his peacock and Ganesh on his rat. On your mark, get set, go! Kartikeya was off. And Ganesh, he was just like... Then he decided, well, there's no use trying to win by this way. So he just wrote Ram on the ground, and he just made a circle about the name of Ram. It took a second. And within a few seconds later, Kartikeya, he's back. I'm back. You're just still here. And Lord Shiva said, Ganesh won. Because not only is the world within the name of Ram, but the whole universe is within the name of Ram. And he circumambulated the name of Ram. Therefore, he went around the whole universe in one-tenth the time that you went around the world. Not only the whole universe, he went around all existence. So this is his faith. Ganesh has faith that the name of Ram is none different than Ram and everything is contained within Ram. So he's a pure devotee. He's not an ordinary living being. He's a pure devotee of the Lord. This story proves that. How much faith? In fact, Srila Prabhupada used to tell us that you become a pure devotee the day you have complete faith that Krishna is non-different than his name. When you have that complete faith that Krishna is absolutely non-different than his name, then you are a pure devotee. So he exhibited this faith. So he's a very exalted position. So we can celebrate him for his devotion to Narayan. On his birthday, we shouldn't, people think, this is my opportunity to ask for the best thing. It's his birthday. If you ask him on his birthday, then there's special potency to your desire. And he will reward. Just give up all this nonsense, lusty mentality. His birthday, we should glorify him because of his great devotion to the Lord. Just like we glorify any great Vaishnava. Such a great Vaishnava. So we praise him for his special position as the Lord's great devotee. We remember his great qualities, how he has complete faith in the holy name. How by his mercy the Mahabharata and many other Vedic literatures are given to us. When we went to Badrikashram, you remember, we went to the cave of Vedavyas. And about a 15-minute walk from that is the cave of Ganapati. And Vyasadeva, sitting in that secluded place on the banks of the river Saraswati, Vyasadeva was reciting the Vedas. And Ganapati, by his divine empowerment, of course elephants have big ears, he was able to hear from such a far away. It wasn't that Vyasadeva was yelling, it's not that he had a mouse amplifier to make his sound vibration go with a wireless microphone or a sound system. He was just talking. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Janma Yashoyata. He was just speaking. But because it was a spiritual transcendental sound, through Ganesha's ears he was hearing the sound and he was writing it down in beautiful Sanskrit handwriting. And it was those pages that he wrote, which was given to the great saints and sages, and became the guiding light for all the world, the Shastra. So what a contribution he has given us. Together with Vyasadeva, the two of them were empowered by Sri Krishna to provide all the Vedas, all the knowledge in which our lives are depending on. The Bhagavad Gita was written by Ganesh. It is part of Mahabharata. So therefore, this wonderful service he has offered to the Lord, and this wonderful service he has offered to all of us, we should be so obliged and thankful to him. So we should praise him to glorify his service to Lord Hari. We shouldn't simply like beggars be asking, give me this, give me that. Such a great soul, we should be thinking, what can I give you? You have given me the Vedas by the mercy of Krishna. You have given me an example of pure faith in the holy name by the mercy of Krishna. So the Vaishnavas, they understand the most pleasing and wonderful way of approaching these holy days. The gopis worship Durga to help them please Krishna. Rupa Goswami taught us, because Durga, her function is to give husbands. The gopis knew that Krishna wanted them. It's not that they wanted to be Krishna's wives. It's that they knew that Krishna wanted them to be his wives. Just like in Vrindavan, there are two camps. There are Chandravali's camps and Radharani's camps. And Radharani and Chandravali are always competing to try to please Krishna. It's not that Radharani is against Chandravali. It's not that she's thinking, oh, I'm better than her and she's nonsense. It's not this type of competition. She's not thinking that I want to enjoy Krishna instead of her. She's thinking that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and Chandravali doesn't really know how to please him properly. So therefore, I should do it because I know what makes him happy. Devotees are always thinking in terms of what makes Krishna happy. So therefore, we should approach this day in such a way of understanding that my worship should be that worship which makes Krishna happy. That is my goal of life. On every holy day, our prayer should be to that particular personality to glorify them in their service to the Lord and to always be thinking how, by your mercy, I can improve the quality of my service to give pleasure to Lord Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.